Welcome to the 180 Podcast. You are listening to a teaching of the 180, a new church committed to learning to love Jesus and love like Jesus. Our prayer is that God would use this teaching to help you grow closer to Him and that you would feel moved to join us in person, where you can grow in community with the larger 180 family.
Bienvenue à la balado-diffusion de l'Église 180. Vous écoutez un enseignement de l'Église 180, une nouvelle Église qui s'est engagée à apprendre à aimer Jésus et à aimer comme Jésus. Notre prière est que Dieu utilisera cet enseignement afin de vous aider à vous rapprocher de lui et que cela vous donne envie de vous joindre à nous en personne où vous pourrez vous épanouir au sein de la communauté qu'est la grande famille de l'Église 180.
For those of you maybe new to church or kind of maybe visiting church again for the first time or haven't been here for a while, one of the things we try to do is to just learn together and take some time and explore different things about Jesus and about God and about faith that would really stretch us. And before I kind of talk about a topic that we started last week, I want to just tell you about an important thing that's happening next Saturday. And next Saturday, we're having an important conversation here at the church. That we called Belong and Become. I mean, we could have called it a lot of things. But as we were singing this song, Cornerstone, I thought it'd be good for us to remember that even churches need to remind themselves of what it means to have Jesus as their cornerstone and how to set things in the right direction and plan properly and think properly and pray in the right way. And many of you have been part of the 180 for a while, you know about our leadership, you know about budgets, you know about our team, you know about our building. And sometimes it's good to have a gathering together, especially at the beginning of the year, to kind of get on the same page. And one of the things we're going to be talking about at that meeting with our advisory board and myself is about what does it mean to really be a ministry partner here at the 180. In traditional church language, that's often language of membership. Like, how do you become a member of a church? What does that mean? All that stuff. And we thought, let's take a Saturday morning together. It's not going to be a long, long time to kind of set the tone for that. Maybe some of you have questions about leadership, about budget stuff. We're going to share with you a little bit about our budget. Some of you, maybe that's new for you because you're like, budget, what does that have to do with anything? You know, everything that happens here at the 180 happens because of the generous and open giving and faithful giving of people like me and you and other partners who help us who are not even here. Maybe some are watching online, other churches in Ontario and in the U.S. that support what we do. And we think it's really important to be transparent and to share that with you. And so we create times where we can do that with you, where we can talk about that. And so next Saturday, you know, even if there's a snowstorm, you're going to be here, right? Some of you are like, yeah, of course we'll be here. So we look forward to seeing you at that meeting. And if you have any questions or have some things you want to talk to me about, feel free to see me. But one of the reasons we call that Saturday morning is Belong and Become is that all of us at some point in our lives have to kind of ask ourselves this very simple question. Who am I becoming? It's very simple. It's a kind of a scary question. Most people avoid asking themselves that question their whole life because they're afraid of what they have to deal with. Like, am I becoming a better person? Am I becoming a better dad? Am I becoming a better employee? Who am I becoming? Like, nobody begins a new year by saying, I hope this year I become worse than I was last year. Like, nobody says that. Nobody says, like, my New Year's resolution is to eat more this year than I ate last year. My New Year's resolution this year is to be, like, worse of a husband than I was last year. That's who I'm becoming. Nobody does that. Like, if somebody did that, you'd be like, dude, are you weird? Like, what are you talking about? We all know that it's something in our human nature to make us feel like maybe we should be becoming better people, kinder people, more generous people. And that's not even a Christian idea. Like, I mean, that's just a human idea of just saying, I want to be a better citizen. I want to be a better parent. If you're in your employee, if you're a teacher, wherever you work, like you just want to be better. You want to try to improve, right? And then there's the part of what it means to become a deeper and more committed follower of Jesus, which is something we started talking about last week. Because all of us at some point will have to wrestle with this very simple issue, which is a word that I introduced to us last week. And so I'm just curious how many of you were listening. Some of you maybe were not. I want to know how many of you remember, what is the word that I kind of introduced us to, which is the word that's going to set the tone for the year? Anyone? What is it? You can yell it out. Discipleship. There it is. It's a big word, and for most of you, it means nothing. Okay? No, I'm kidding. It's a word that it kind of has like a clunky, like nobody goes around and uses the word discipleship every day. It's not everyday language. But I'll tell you another word that is like that word that is everyday language. All of us make a decision to become learners of someone. We become learners of something. The word disciple is actually to be a learner, to be a pupil. There's the word discipline in there as well, which is kind of you discipline yourself to become a certain person. And in the Bible, this is the most common word, probably Jesus' favorite word, for when he invites people to follow him. He says to them, hey, you should follow me and become, guess what? My disciple. Like, you should do that. It's always surprising for people when I tell them, like, Jesus doesn't say, hey, you should accept me in your heart. He doesn't say you should do a prayer and come to the altar. He doesn't say any of that. And over the years, especially if you're familiar with church, if you're watching online, you might have heard this kind of language where many of us in church world or many of us who kind of try to understand God have confused believing in God with becoming a disciple of Jesus. They're different, right? Many people are like, you just have to believe in God and accept Jesus in your heart and go get him. That's it. But that's kind of a surprise that none of that is actually in the Bible. That's not how it actually works, right? It's kind of ways that we talk about it. And for those of you who weren't here, just a quick recap, 30 seconds, right? I remember growing up learning about this when I was really, really young and I was starting to think, like, do I believe in God? My parents want me to believe in God, but I don't think I believe in God. And what am I going to do? I kind of have to do what my parents tell me to do until I can leave my house, all that stuff. And I remember thinking, like, what do I really believe? And I would visit a church or, you know, I grew up in a Roman Catholic context. My parents, I was actually an altar boy. Any altar boys in the house? Yeah? What? Yeah, right. Okay, I think we had a badge. I don't know. So I was an altar boy. And then my mom started going to a Protestant church, which was very different. I'm like, this is kind of really, really different. And in all of that, there was a sense that at some point I had to accept Jesus in my heart as my personal savior. Like language like that. Anyone familiar with that language? Yeah. Okay. So what people were hoping I understood from that is, are you ready to follow Jesus and die? Like, that's what they were hoping was going to happen. But that's not what I heard. I just heard, like, I come to the front and I put my hand up and I say a prayer and I hope I die and go to the right place. Anyone? Like, that is the magic. Like, you can get a tattoo of that. It's like that simple. And as you start to learn about Jesus and as you start to take the Bible seriously and as you read about him, you realize, wait a second, Jesus never did that? And actually, he doesn't. He hopes people believe in God, but really believing in God is a stepping stone to them getting to the place where they say, you know what, I need to start to follow you, Jesus, and consider all the other things I'm following that are not you. And the word for this is to be a disciple of Jesus. Here's the most dangerous thing about the word discipleship, that all of us at some point are a disciple of something. All of us. I mean, and I'm not going to rehash this, but all of us have someone that we look up to. And if you can't think of that person, think of the person you follow on Twitter and check their feed every morning, or a person on Instagram, or the person you want to be like. Anyone who inspires you is calling you to be their disciple. Anyone. If you're on Pinterest and you're following someone, just delete your account. It's poison. Pinterest is from the devil. Whatever. I'm just saying, like, there's mechanisms in our culture where we're drawn to, like, I want to be like that person. I want to be that. And just like today, in the Bible, there were other disciples. There were other teachers. Jesus wasn't the only teacher. There were all kinds of teachers that people followed. And they said, you should follow me. You should follow me. Actually, John the Baptist, who will end up baptizing Jesus, he has disciples too. Like, he's calling people to follow him. And at some point, John the Baptist says, you know what? You guys, like, you know I've been asking you to follow me, but now that Jesus isn't here, you need to stop following me and you need to follow him. Like, I was just here to prepare you for this. And so this discipleship idea is everywhere in the culture, just like it is today. And last week, I introduced us to kind of a verse that I quickly read, and I want to read again this morning as I begin, to help us to understand the beautiful gift that awaits us when we decide to be disciples of Jesus. In this passage is one of the most beautiful ways that Jesus talks about discipleship, because he uses language of, like, what it means to have a life that bears fruit. What it means to have a life that's full of, like, life-giving purpose. That's the language that's used. And in John's gospel, at one point, this is what it says. Jesus is talking to his followers, and he says this. He says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch of me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, so that it will be even more fruitful. If you remain in me, and my words remain in you, ask whatever you wish, and it will be done for you. This is to my Father's glory that you bear much what? Fruit. That, like, you're purposeful. You have meaning. That you're transformative. That you have influence. This is my Father. My Father's glorified when you live this way. And then he says, showing yourselves to be my disciples. So I want to just introduce you to two very important things that are part of discipleship in the Christian understanding of the word that are very hard for us to understand. One of the hardest things about saying yes to following Jesus is that everybody follows Jesus when they think he can give them something. This is like very, very common. If people are walking, even in the ancient world, you're like, I don't know if we have food today, and I don't know if I feel well. And people are like, dude, there's this guy called Jesus that if we go see him, I heard he makes like lots of food appear from a little lunch. Like, he's amazing. So let's go see him. So people are always following people who they think could give them something. That's really, really common. If you're in a business world and you're involved in like leadership development and all that stuff, it's a whole billion-dollar industry out there. The language is like, just show people what you could give them. Like, just show them how you could serve them. Everybody follows people who think they're going to serve them. That's like just the rule, right? But Jesus at some point realizes that people are following him for the wrong reasons. They're just following him because he's going to make them rich and take care of them. He's going to heal their cat, whatever. Hey, some of you got that. It's a joke. Jesus doesn't heal anybody's cat. But there's a sense that he can heal people. And at some point, Jesus says, there is a blessing to following me. But sometimes you need to understand that if you really want to understand the kind of life that I'm calling you to, my Father will prune you. Like, not like the just prune, like eating a prune, but pruning is like this cleaning and cutting and shaving and polishing idea that is so painful that nobody would be like, yeah, pick me, please, me first. I can't wait till God like starts to do this in my life. I know a lot of people that the minute they start to face like a challenge in their life, they're like, I knew God wasn't real. I knew it. I knew there is no God. No, I'm not going to church ever again. I hate this. Right away. Like it's the go-to. Because they learn about Jesus in such a way where somehow following Jesus is just believing in God. And believing in God is that God does nice things for you when you believe in him. Or it's good karma, or it's positive energy, whatever people say. And then Jesus says, hey, by the way, actually, you're really called to be my disciples because the way you live brings glory to my Father. That's what we're going to do. People are like, that's what, I don't think I signed up for that. I don't want that. That sounds really, really great, but I don't want that. And it doesn't say like the world is going to do bad things to you. It doesn't say people are going to attack your faith. It says the Father is going to prune you. Like, when's the last time you felt God pruning you? When's the last time you felt you were in a season in your life where you were learning certain things that you're like, I don't know why I'm going through the season of difficulty right now or challenge or this overwhelming sense that God is trying to teach me something new. Like, when's the last time that happened to you? I have a time in my life over December, over the month of December, I felt for like about a week's time, a quiet time when I was praying, when I was reading, when I was studying, that God is trying to teach me some things that I've really been stubborn to learn for the past little while. That's been me in my life. And it's easy for me to be like, oh, bad stuff is happening to me because of this, rather than saying, God, maybe this is you trying to show me something that I don't see yet. This is something you want me to learn. Why? Just because I could be a better person? No, because if I learn this, some of this will bring glory to who you are. Because we are called to be, people can see that we're disciples of Jesus. Jesus says, as the Father prunes you, this will be an example that you could show others what it means to be a disciple of mine. This is such a hard concept for us to understand. Because any time in our culture we hear of this happening, we think, oh, maybe God is angry and he's trying to punish us. I'm not into that shame and guilt trip church stuff. That's none of the language we see in the Bible. Actually, the language that we're invited to see our life through is this language of, do you want your life this year to be fruitful? Do you want that? Do you want your life to feel like at the end of 2018, we're going to have our New Year's Eve service, we're going to be like, do you want to look back and say, you know what, I made a decision early in January to be a disciple of Jesus in a new way. I'll remember that. And because of that, my life started to have a different focus, a different purpose, I gave attention to different things. I started to let God teach me what it means to trust him when I was, instead of being worried. I let God kind of stretch me so I would be more generous when really I would be greedy. Like, imagine if you made that decision to say, Father, I need you to kind of prune some things in me so that I can become the person I actually need to be and want to be. It's such a hard thing to understand. It's the thing that I remember struggling the most in as I've been growing up and learning about God. And there's one person who taught me this lesson better than anyone else. And some of you maybe know this, but in my former life, when I was like a lot younger and better looking, okay, I used to be a drummer. okay? I still play drums. How many of you knew that? I'm just curious. I used to play drums. I play a little bit on the side when David forces me, but I try not to anymore. But before I went to study theology, before I went to Bible college, before I had a family, when I wanted to be a rock star, that's my era. They're like, move to New York, be famous, travel with Bon Jovi, something dumb like that, okay? When I wanted to be famous, okay, I decided that I wanted to be like a drummer and a musician. So I practiced all this stuff, and I got accepted at Vanier College. Vanier College people? Yes! Yeah! No, whatever, I don't care. So I go to Vanier College, and I realize, like, there's so many, like, amazing musicians. You know, when you're in, like, your church or you're with your friends, you're like, I'm the best of my school. I'm so great. I'm amazing. How does not everybody want me to play with them? And then you go to, like, a real school, and you're like, I suck. Oh, like, well, I'm a loser. Like, what is going on? I don't even know how to hold my sticks. So anyway, there's counseling for that. I'm working on it. Some of you got that? Okay, so I go to this school, I get accepted, and I have one of the greatest drum teachers in Quebec, who's my teacher. Actually, my drum teacher was such a great teacher that Netflix actually has a documentary on drumming, and my teacher is actually in this documentary. If you watch it, I remember watching it and thinking, hey, that's my teacher. That's the guy who I hate, and I love the guy. I love him. Love him. One day, I remember it was one of our first classes, and I said to him, you know, I really need to improve this, and I want to get better like this. And he's like, oh, it's great. Tell me some of the drummers you're listening to. Well, he was asking me, who are your disciples, right? Who are you listening to want to play like? Makes sense. And I told him, I want to be like this drummer. He's really, really good. He plays soft. This drummer is really, really fast. I want to play fast, all this stuff. So one day, I go into my drum room at school. We have like a drum room, and I get in there, and in front of our drums is a mirror set up. I'm like, what the heck? Somebody forgot a mirror in here? That's so ridiculous. And drummers at the school, for those of you who understand, have a special key. Only drummers who are accepted in the school can go in the drum room. So I go in, getting ready for my lesson, and my teacher comes in, and he says, Dom, isn't this great? Like, I got a mirror for you. I'm like, why? Like, I look great. This is going to be wonderful. He goes, no, I want you from now on, for the next few weeks, to watch yourself playing drums. I'm like, why? Because there's many of the things that you want to do one day that you will never be able to do if you don't correct some things that you're doing now. I'm like, who hired you? I hate people like you. I'm the best. You don't want to hear any of that. You think you're great and you're young and And he's like, no, just watch this. So he begins the lesson. So he goes, okay, so sit on the drum set. I'll never forget this. I was so upset. I'm like, I signed up to play drums and you're teaching me how to sit. Sit like this, sit like that. Well, who cares? Let's play. He goes, no, you're never going to play like this if you don't correct this. And so he started. He goes, you know your shoulders, this shoulder? He'd come and he'd be like, this shoulder should be like this from now on. I'm like, are you kidding me? I hate my life. Okay, so I'm doing this, and I do this, I don't even know, 6 months, 7 months, watching myself, not just me, but other drummers in my class. We are watching ourselves play. What is he trying to teach us? He's trying to teach us that if we want to become these drummers that we really were hopeful to be like, we had to pay attention to things in our posture, in our playing, that needed to be adjusted. It was a type of pruning with love. It was a type of pruning with purpose. When we don't learn about the pruning of God with a picture of our purpose in mind, all pruning feels painful. I'm going to say that again. When we don't learn about God's pruning in our lives with a glimpse of the purpose He has for us, all pruning feels painful. And then that painful pruning becomes the stepping stone for you to leave. To be like, this is ridiculous. But what God does for us and what Jesus says is my disciples are not just like learning to be good people. They're not just learning to be better than they were last year. They're not just like being more centered and more rest. They're not just doing that. They're deciding that they're going to live the kind of life that brings glory to the Father. And when they have that purpose in mind, all pruning is seen through those lenses. He's like, now you understand that. That's what has to happen. And he does this and he invites his disciples to follow him. And then Jesus is going to do something really important that I find really, really bothers me when I read the Bible. There's some things maybe you read in the Bible that bother you. It bothers me that it takes the greatest teacher, who's the Son of God, 3 years with guys to help them be disciples. Like, I meet people and I'm like, dude, I have 3 hours. Okay, I'm going to tell you what to do, and then you're going to do it, okay? And they're like, three, okay, and they don't, doesn't work. And you're like, how long is this going to take? And then I have moments where God says, hey, by the way, Jesus came and it took 3 years. And one of them was a complete screw-up, by the way. So how long do you think it's going to take you? I'm like, oh, this is going to be a lot of work. We can't just do this with a tweet. Can I do tweets every week? Twitter tweets. Can I do pictures? Can we just do a picture? And Jesus is like, no. You know what you're going to do? You're going to quit your job, and you're going to follow me. Isn't that going to be great? They're like, what? No, we're not going to do that. He's like, oh, yeah, you are going to do that. It's going to be wonderful. you're going to decide to be my disciples. This is awesome. They're like, no, it's not awesome. Like, I got to tell my wife that I have no job. I got to tell my parents that I think I have to be. I think about this all the time because I remember when I first told my dad that I thought I had to be a pastor, which in my dad's idea was like, you're going to be a priest. He's like, why? Like, who's going to pay you? Why would you do that? I'm like, I know, it sounds crazy. Whatever. All of us at some point are invited to be disciples of Jesus. Now, don't get me wrong. Jesus doesn't call everybody to quit their job, and he doesn't do that all. But he calls all of us to die to something. All of us are called to die to something that grips our hearts, that makes it hard for us to say, Jesus, like, I am it. Like, I'm really ready to follow you. And I'll learn with you. And if you're pruning me and if you're correcting, I'm ready to do this. And so for 3 years, not only is this the most awkward thing ever, 3 years, but I want to highlight one thing that almost everybody misses about Jesus. Okay, I've never been at a church that kind of explains this well, and I remember learning it and thinking, I want to talk about this. It would have been the most awkward thing for young men to follow a Jewish rabbi who was single in his 30s in the ancient world. Okay, I'm going to say that again. It would have been the most awkward thing for you to be following a guy who's in his 30s, he's still single, he's just traveling around, he doesn't have like a real job. Imagine you tell your parents that, like, I'm going to follow that guy. Well, look at him. He's like a loser. Does he even have a family? Does he know how to have kids? Does he know how to parent? No, I don't know. I don't think so. He's not married at all. Why would you follow him? Find another rabbi to follow, like a popular one, like one that's going to maybe teach you something different. Follow someone that's going to teach you like about life. What does this guy know about life? And you know why I talk about it this way? Because so many people in church have such a negative way of talking about people who are single today. So many of us. Like, some people are called to be single and to commit their lives to following God and being obedient. And there's these pressures in certain culture that's like, I gotta get my life together. And you only really get your life together when you have a mortgage and have kids. That's how you know. At least it is in my culture. I don't know how it is in yours. Jesus would have done none of that. It would have been the most awkward thing to be like, we're following him. I'd be like, why would you do that? And for 3 years, these guys who start to follow Jesus, they're in this inner circle of Jesus. And at one point, Jesus is going to kind of, I guess he's going to like turn up the heat with them to say, guys, you know, it's been great. You saw me do some healings. You saw me, like, we had meals together. I taught you some important things you never heard before. And then at one point, I want to emphasize it, this part of the story this morning before we end our time together. In the book of Matthew, which is actually one of the disciples of Jesus writes, we're told of a moment where Jesus is going to talk about discipleship in a new way. And they're like, I don't think we understand this. Like, what are you talking about? This is what it says. Profound. As Jesus was going up to Jerusalem, he took the 12 disciples aside privately, and he told them what was going to happen to him. He has this unique relationship with his disciples where he lets them in on stuff. And this is what he says. Listen, he said, we're going up to Jerusalem where the Son of Man will be betrayed. By the way, the Son of Man is a title for Jesus himself. And he's like, I'm going to be betrayed now, guys. And they're like, what are you talking about? Whatever. And he says, then they will hand him over to the Romans. Actually, the Greek word is Gentile, but Romans works. To be mocked, flogged with a whip, and crucified. But on the third day, he will be raised from the dead. Jesus is having this huddle conversation with his disciples. He's like, guys, get close. I don't want everybody else to hear this. People are following us. You guys need to understand now that because you're my disciples, I'm letting you in on something that's going to look very, very painful to people who see it and are not my disciples. Jesus is giving them eyes to see things they could not see without his help. Okay? He's going to say, I'm going to give you the right perspective to interpret this painful situation now. When they take me and you feel like it's all going to fall apart, remember that on the third day, I will be raised again. Like, it's me. I'm the one, right? So you're going to be nervous, you're going to be scared, but don't lose perspective. You know what? Jesus is still doing that today for his disciples. To this day, Jesus is still teaching his disciples, those of us who want to be his disciples, to see things in a way that are way beyond of just what's there, like naturally. To see in something the purpose of something which is bigger than just what maybe we're feeling in that moment. Jesus calls his disciples together and he's like, this is going to be such a profound moment. And you 12, there's maybe a few more, but some of you here, actually one of you here, is going to betray me. How painful that is. And he says, this is what's going to happen now as we kind of, 3 years in,
Like, I'm like, 3 years in, Jesus, couldn't you get it all right? Couldn't it be like 500 people you prepared? So it's like, best teacher ever. Just time with them and teaching them and helping them understand. And out of the blue, something really weird happens in the story. He's having this talk. This is what happens. This is one of my favorite stories in the Bible. I was telling my mom this the other day. Because a mom shows up in the story. We don't always hear lots of moms showing up in the Bible, but Jesus is a point in the story. Then, all of a sudden, the mother of James and John, who were disciples of Jesus, the sons of Zebedee, came to Jesus with her sons. She's like, hey, Jesus, you know, a little thing I want to ask you here. She knelt respectively to ask a favor. What is your request? He asked. I try to understand this. Like, it's really important, like, that there's women who are tracking along with Jesus sometimes. And in this case, we know that not only are James and John disciples of Jesus, but their mother is kind of there as well. She's not in the inner core. She's not always invited into everything. But she's following. She's committed. She's there. And she gets this, like, chance to ask Jesus a question. Like, if you could ask Jesus one question, what would you ask him? I mean, people waited in line for hours to get, like, an audience with Jesus. I mean, any of you ever, like, go somewhere and you're waiting in line forever and you decide, this is not that important, I'm out of here, I don't even care. Anyone? You realize, that's not going to work, I don't even care, I don't need a picture with them. Or yeah, if you've been to the Vatican, you're like, I just want to see the Pope, or you want to see, like, an artist or someone you love, right? This mother, we're told, we know her name from other parts of the Bible, but she shows up and she has a chance to ask Jesus a question. If you could ask Jesus a question today, what would it be? I'll just give you a little bit of a hint. She's going to ask Jesus a question about her kids. She has, like, a specific question that has to do with her boys and Jesus. If you could ask Jesus a question on behalf of your kids, what would it be? What would you say? I wrestled with this week. I was like, I mean, Isaac, I need him to talk less. Josiah, I need him to do his homework more. Like, I was thinking, like, what would I ask for? What kinds of things would I ask for? What would you ask for? She's there, she has an audience with Jesus, and he says, you know what? Maybe she overheard that a little while ago, he maybe had said, now, if you ask anything in my name, it's yours. Like, this is it. She's like, I'm in this, I'm going to do this. You know, this week as I was preparing my sermon, and I was working, I was studying, and how I prepare is, like, I read a passage, I study it, I pray, then I go back and all this stuff. I get an email from my kid's school. Like, just in this moment where I'm thinking about, how would I pray for my kids with more intentionality if I had to ask Jesus one thing for them? And I get this email from the kids. You can go to the picture. And there was the email. It's like strategic test taking for your kids. If you have kids, you might, your school does this. And it's like, how to help over there? How do you help strategies with your kids? And I'm thinking, we have a whole culture in our world of how do we help our kids succeed? Who is a parent and doesn't want their kids to succeed? Nobody. Everybody's like, I'm getting them to the best school. I'm getting to the best camp. I'm getting them to the best this. They're going to have the best teacher. We think of all these success things, and we want them in the best school where they can learn multiple languages so they have the most advantage, all of these things. But rarely do we stop and say, what kind of strategies do I have in place in my home to help my kids be disciples of Jesus? Rarely. What we do, we hope that discipleship in Jesus happens by osmosis. By standing and walking through the church building and Dom kind of sprinkles something on you. Like, I hope it works. But everything else we have a strategy for. We got strategies for. Imagine I told you for the next 3 weeks, every Monday night, you need to be here with your kids to help them understand what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. You'd be like, are you crazy? That's insane. I'm not doing that. But if somebody said, if you come here every, you know, Monday night and we're going to have the best soccer player from the Impact, even though that doesn't exist, but from the Impact, you got that? You got that? Okay, whatever. Whatever, this is a joke, okay? If you're watching and you're on the Impact, we love you. I don't know. So you're like, you would be like, okay, hon, we're going to let's cancel that. They don't have to go to school for this. Let's just get them to the practice. They're going to be, we all decide the kinds of disciples we want to make by how we set up our schedules. All of us. I always find it's amazing as parents, because I was a youth pastor for years, how we think it's going to happen by mistake or by chance, and then when our kids are like 20, we're always shocked that they don't care about being disciples of Jesus. They're like, who cares? I don't really believe it matters to be a disciple of Jesus. I want to be a disciple of Beyonce. Like, I want to be a disciple of the Kardashians. They're rich. That's what I want. So I'll watch their feed and buy their stuff. Can we just be honest and stop playing games? Every day from this point on, you will be bombarded with invitations on how to make your kids disciples of something. And you will set the pace for that. And so we all have to say, Jesus, I need your help to help my kids understand what it means to be your disciple. I need your help. I thought about this, and I want to go back to the prayer that I was trying to think of for my kids. Because anytime we ask anything of Jesus that has nothing to do with becoming disciples of his, he probably ignores. You can tweet that. Let's say it again. Anytime we ask anything of Jesus that is not somehow an openness to saying, I'm asking this because I want my life to be set in pace to the glory of the Father. Anytime we pray in a way that's not like that, the prayer is like, what, you want me to help you? What, that, whatever. Okay, sure. And then we wonder, we're like, why didn't Jesus fix that? How come that didn't happen? Because the Bible is an invitation for all of us to set our hearts and minds pointing towards us wanting to be followers of Jesus. And so I want to leave, especially if you're parents, with this very important thing to remember. This week, would you find some quiet time, whether it's in traffic, whether it's sitting at a desk, whether it's just having a coffee, say, God, I need you to help me pray more intentionally about what it means to ask something of you to help my kids be your disciples. Because I know I have to do that, and I know you have to do that, and most importantly, we as a church have to learn to do that. Because at some point in this story, the mother's going to ask Jesus this great thing. And I don't want to be the one who says it, but Jesus is about to tell a mother that she's wrong. Ready for this? It's the best. If you tell a mother she's wrong, oh my gosh. Okay, here we go. She replied, in your kingdom, please let my two sons sit in places of honor next to you. I want my boys to be the boss. Like, I want them to be in charge of everything. I think they're great. They're my kids. It's amazing. One on your right and the other on your left, which are symbolic of authority in the Bible. I would think my boys should be like your assistants. That'd be good. What a great prayer. This is insane, by the way. It's awesome. Okay? But Jesus answered by saying to them, can you picture Jesus saying this to this mom? Like, are you crazy right now? No, that's not what he says. Okay? He says, you do not know what you're asking. Like, are you really praying like this? This is your prayer. This is your request. You have no idea what you're asking. Are you able to drink from the bitter cup of suffering I'm about to drink? And the sons are listening in, right? Because they're like, sweet, our mom is going to ask you. And this is what they say. Oh, yes, they replied, we are able. This is the greatest scam on Jesus ever. It's like, okay, can you picture this? Like, okay, mom, this is what's going to happen. You're going to go to Jesus. You're going to tell him, because he's not going to yell at you. You're our mom. You go to Jesus. You tell him we should be in charge of things in the kingdom. And then when he starts using like language none of us understand, which is poetry about suffering in cups, we'll show up and say, we're in. We got this. Ready? Play. He just watched this unfold. And Jesus, in this gentle way, is like, do you understand that to be a disciple of mine and to stand at the right and the left of me in all authority is to be ready to die? You think if the mom understood this, she would have asked this of Jesus? She would have been like, I don't want that. No, I don't want that. I want them to just sit, like, be in charge. And Jesus says, they're my disciples because they're going to live the kind of selfless life that points other people to my Father. That's what they're going to do. We know that James and John, eventually in the future, will be martyred for the faith. And you read this moment and you feel like Jesus has been with them for 3 years and they still don't understand this. One of the most difficult things that we will face in our church is when one generation tries to pass on the faith to another generation in a way that's not faithful to the scriptures. I mean, we let that sit in. One of the most difficult things, imagine, you're like, the mother, instead of saying, are you guys nuts? Like, that's not what it means to follow Jesus. To follow Jesus is you have to be ready to, she's the one actually that's about to pass on something to her kids that is actually going to be wrong, and Jesus is going to say, that's not going to happen. My kingdom is not like the kingdom of this world. My kingdom doesn't work that way. Being my disciple is not really a commitment to being the boss or in charge the way you've seen in the world. And that's exactly what's going to happen next in the story. And something much more complicated is going to happen when this happens next. Jesus told them, you will indeed drink from my bitter cup. Jesus knows what's going to happen. But I have no right to say who will sit on my right or my left. My Father has prepared those places for the ones he has chosen. Jesus is saying, you know what? This is so much more mysterious than you can ever understand. I'm going to leave this with the Father. It's not this conversation we're having right now. When the 10 other disciples heard what James and John had asked, they were indignant. Some translations, King James, like very, very angry. Now Jesus has like a church fight on his hands. His disciples now are going to Jerusalem with the focus of Jesus going to, and now the other disciples are like, James and John, you tried to pull what on us? With your mother? Like you tried to think that you're better than us? That you guys should somehow be in charge of this? Can you imagine how difficult this would be for Jesus to say, you are my disciples. You have to model for everyone what it means to love each other now. You know, one of the most profound things I've learned over the years, I've been a pastor, not for a long time, but long enough, over 20 years now, how easy moments of disagreement turn into catastrophic division. In homes, in friendships, in a marriage, in a church, it is the poison of the devil to do this. You know why? Because it's subtle. It's not like, oh, we're going to come and get you and burn you in hell. Everybody be like, whoa, that's scary. I'm out of here. It doesn't happen that way because we'd all run. It's this subtle, subtle reminder that says this. You're better than them. Hey, you're so much better than them. Why wouldn't you be in charge? And you're like, wait a second. That's true. I should start a website and a blog and an email. I should write a book. You see, because we live in a world that not only makes you believe that, but then gives you tools to sell yourself that way. And in the church, Jesus says, with his disciples, he says, you guys and girls, you, when there's a division like this, may you remember that you're called to some higher purpose. And that higher purpose is going to help you in your disagreement and make sure that a disagreement doesn't turn into a division. Doesn't turn into something destructive that destroys your marriage or your friendships. Don't let it happen that way. You know how that happens? When we admit when we're wrong. We don't know. Like, I wish we had the next section that says James and John talk to the guys, and they're like, guys, we are so sorry. Like, we should never have tried to do that. I don't know what you were thinking. We don't know. We have no idea what happens next. We don't know if the mother's like, Jesus just told me that I don't know how to pray. That's what Jesus just told me. Yeah, he kind of did. Sorry. Okay, we don't know what happens. All we know is that there's a situation with the disciples of Jesus where they're learning to understand who they are in a new way. And who they are in a new way is going to help them understand the world in a new way. And that's exactly how Jesus is going to end this conversation before he goes to Jerusalem. This is what he says at the end. But Jesus called them together and said, last huddle, here we go. You know that the rulers in this world lord it over their people and officials flaunt their authority over those under them. Like, you know that all the examples you have of being a leader, being in charge, is this authoritative power, have all the answers, proud way of doing things. But among you, it will be different. Just underline that and just take that to the bank. 2018, that's it. But among you, it will be different. Whoever wants to be a leader among you must be your servant. For even the Son of Man came not to be served, but to serve others, and to give his life as a ransom for many. The world is dying for the church to be this church. The world and people that I know are dying for a picture and what it means to be a disciple of Jesus like this. My kids and my family and the people that I love have all kinds of options on the kind of disciples they're going to be. But Jesus says, in this kingdom, the kingdom that I'm building, disciples are going to be those who look for ways to serve others. Look for ways to step into a situation and think of others instead of yourself and try to help. And that's not because they can say, look how great I am. I helped all the kids and nobody else. It's not that. Because the purpose is always something greater. It's to the Father's glory. God's going to give all of us opportunities in 2018 to serve in some way. And we will either say, how is me serving in this going to help me? Or we will say, I will serve here because this is what Jesus will want me to do. I will do that. All of us are going to get an opportunity to do that. We ask you, we invite you to serve at the church, and that's one way that you can do that. Some of you, maybe you're like, for the first time, I'm going to serve. I'm going to serve with our kids. I'm going to help scrubbing toilets. I'm going to mop. Maybe I can help with on the worship team, whatever. You're going to say, I'm going to serve. Maybe it's going to be annoying, my schedule, but I'm going to serve. But that's not the only way we serve. God's going to give you opportunities in your workplace. God's going to give me opportunities to think of ways I can serve my wife and love her in new ways, and she's in the room, and she's probably thinking, amen, holla, what's up? All of us. Actually, Jesus will say this to the men. He's like, hey, men, love your wives the way I love the church. Serve them in that way. He's like, that sounds so great when you're sharing vows. It sounds so great when they look all pretty. And then you're like, I don't know, it's not working. And Jesus says, but my disciples, it's going to be so different. This is something that is impossible to do in our own strength. It is impossible to be disciples of Jesus by just willpower and quotes and just tips. It's impossible. The only way we become disciples of Jesus is by surrendering ourselves to following him. That's it. It's not just say, I said a prayer, he's in my heart, I'm going to heaven, gotta go. It's none of that. Although that's important, that's part of the whole thing, but it's not that. It's saying, I'm going to follow Jesus wherever he takes me. And I'm going to choose to serve and look for ways to model a different way of life. This week, how can you look for ways to provide like Jesus discipleship in a situation? You know, as I was preparing this week, I was thinking of a story and I was kind of torn about whether to share it. Because every so often, like, you share a story and the story I'm going to share, I feel like I need to share, but I want to say something before I share it, and I'm going to close with this. Is I'm going to share a story not to kind of make it look like, oh, I always know what to do and I always have the right answer and I'm like perfect, okay? Because too often it's easy to be like, oh, the pastor, like Dom, floats on clouds and he's talking to Jesus. It's amazing. Wow. It's not that way. It's hard work and prayer and serving and mistakes. But a few months ago, a situation happened in our family that really, because I was thinking about this topic for the year for our church, like I was thinking about discipleship needs to be the language I use so often that people want to kill me. They're like, Dom, we know, we're disciples, we know. Okay, I'm going to keep doing it, okay? And so there was this moment where I really think God provided an opportunity where I had to figure out how to be a disciple in a very messy situation. And there wasn't a verse, I couldn't go in the Bible and look up, don't do that. And it had to do with my neighbor. If they're listening, I love you, and I don't know if they are, but, you know, it had to do with my neighbor next door, and we had a situation where somebody had given us a temple, you know, those gifts from heaven that cover the snow from your car, whatever. So, you know, we had this temple, and what ended up happening, I'm going to go really, really quickly in the story, is I got some people to help me. I went on Kijiji, you know, get someone to help me, like, put up the temple. I'd never done it before. And as I'm doing this, my neighbor comes out and says, hey, Dom, what's going on? I'm like, dude, got this temple, it's going to be great. He's like, and it was this kind of interaction, like, I'm really disappointed you're doing that. I was like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, what do you mean? He goes, well, you know, the previous owner of the house, we had agreed because our driveways are next to each other that we wouldn't put a temple because the snow actually falls on all of our cars and all this stuff. And this was the situation that I was in. And so picture this moment where it was like, the guys who are putting up the temple who I'm paying in my head, like just get money's just falling out of my pocket. I'm like, guys, pause. Like, pause right now. Okay, so I'm here with my neighbor, and I'm thinking, like, I don't want to be a disciple of Jesus. Like, I have a few things I want to say. That's awesome. Okay, some people are just going to be really honest today and say, forget him, screw him. Let's just be honest. And I had a moment where I'm like, what are you talking about? And long story, I know all of you are doing right now, okay? Some of you are like, yeah, it's not, there was a moment where I just felt this was a moment for me, okay? Doesn't mean you would have done the same thing in my situation. I understand. But I'm praying you would have thought of it, okay? A moment where I'm like, what do I do? Like, I could just say, listen, I don't really care about snowing. You get a temple. Get a life. Get a job. I don't even care. And I had a moment where I'm like, I just need to model what it's like to think of others before me. My wife's going to leave me when I tell her this, but maybe I need to, like, maybe sell the temple and figure out another option. And so in that moment, I decided that I wasn't going to put up the temple, and we kind of sold and all these things, and I'm just telling you the fast version of the story. But it was so hard to know what to do, and it's so much easier to just preach to you about being a disciple of Jesus. It's so easy to just tell you, you go do this. Be great when you do that. And Jesus is like, you do it, Dom. It's going to be great. I'm like, I hate this. And it's so funny because, you know, my wife and I laughed about this and we were scraping the car this morning. She's like, we had a tempo. Like, I love you, hon. I love you. And we just kind of like tried to make sense of how to do this. And it's not because I always do the right thing. It's not because I know the answer all the time. And it's not like in other situations I might have said, forget that. It's not the right thing now. But in that moment, it was at least a battle in my heart to say, Jesus, you're calling me to be your disciple. And I don't know what to do now. And I need your help and wisdom now. And I'm going to encourage all of us to look for moments we are learning to think about what it means to serve and to give people a different picture of what it means to be neighbors and friends and parents, co-workers, a different image. Not with revenge, not with anger, not always even knowing what to do. Some of you are here like, Dom, I don't know if I would have done that. Maybe I did the opposite thing and I have to ask God to forgive me, whatever. But I just want to close with this very simple thought. This week, Jesus is going to provide opportunities for you to be his disciple, to practice following him in the most difficult and messy situations. Sometimes you'll know what to do and sometimes you won't, and that's okay. But just the commitment to want to be a disciple of his is what counts. So I'm gonna have a stand as we close. Let me just pray for us. Jesus, we thank you for inviting us into this beautiful partnership where we can be your disciples. None of us, I think, would just choose it on our own. It's more difficult than we can ever imagine, and yet more beautiful and mysterious than we could ever imagine. It's you that invites us into the life of discipleship. And you are calling all of us to be your followers, to live a new way of life where we invite your discipline and pruning, where we practice serving others and modeling a different kingdom and a different way of life. Being your disciples teaches us how to pray properly and how to think of you first and think of others first. Teach us today what it means to be the kind of church that takes discipleship seriously. Help me and our advisory board to model this in our lives. Help us as we practice this when we get it right and when we get it wrong, may we be the first ones to say we need more help and we need to grow. But as we continue in this series in the next few weeks and continue to learn about this, would you just remind us in your way that discipleship is about a fruitful life? It's about a life filled with joy and purpose and a life that's filled with meaning and at times deep pain as well. Help us to see you at work and help us to have the bigger purpose in mind as we trust you in this journey of being your disciples. For those who are here this morning and maybe they're not ready to say yes to you, maybe you're watching online or maybe they're not sure that they're ready to be your disciples, I pray that you would help them where they are to understand this invitation, this gift filled with grace to follow you. We pray this in your name, Jesus. Amen.